Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. With the proliferation of kids' cooking shows on TV these days, it's evident that the kitchen is increasingly becoming the favorite playground of many a child. So this week's Louisiana Eats is dedicated to the budding chefs of tomorrow and everyone who is young at heart. We'll explore Melina Hammer's new cookbook, Kid Chef, intended for children, but so thorough in teaching technique that many adults could benefit from it as well. Then we move on to Yummy Fun Cooking, a wacky children's video series from artist Claire Crespo. Finally, Sunoco Sakai teaches us a lesson in rice craft, and we'll learn how to create onigiri, a Japanese dish much like sushi, but so easy your preschooler will want to get in the act and just might expect to find some in their lunchbox. Let's all play with our food on this week's Louisiana Eats. From the chef de cuisine at the finest restaurant, or someone who just occasionally makes dessert at home, one thing all cooks have in common is their skill set had to begin somewhere. That's exactly what Melina Hammer had in mind when she wrote Kid Chef, the Foodie Kids Cookbook, which offers aspiring young chefs the tools they need to succeed in the kitchen. Filled with over 75 surprisingly sophisticated and healthy recipes, Kid Chef is a crash course in culinary training. But as Melina explained, it's a book anyone can enjoy.
It's really a grown-up cookbook disguised to be for kids, because anybody truly without a culinary background would benefit from, you know, looking through the pages and trying out any of the recipes.
Well, let's start at the beginning, because really and truly, to me at least, what your cookbook is, it's like a cooking school between two covers. So walk us through how you take the cooking lesson that is the Kid Chef cookbook.
Well, the idea is, of course, I'm talking to kids who are passionate and curious about food. And with that, there is no assumption of understanding anything. And that's one of the things that I think cookbooks for regular people, for grown-ups, omit. And there are so many processes that people would actually benefit from understanding at a specific step-by-step level that then solidify those things so that you can move forward and work into greater complexity of techniques and recipes. And so starting at these foundational pieces really establishes and empowers the child reading the book, or, you know, the child at heart reading the book.
I was very surprised at also the sophistication of some of the dishes. You know, was there anything you felt was a little risky?
Absolutely. For me, it was important not to candy coat or to dumb down food. I have become so passionate about food and the diversity, the universe that exists in food through the years of my own journey, that I wanted to share elements that gave pieces of that universe. I want to just put it out there and let them feel inspired by any of the things present.
Here's what I'm the most curious about, Melina. You don't have children. So any of us who have written a cookbook knows that one of the key elements has to be arduous recipe testing. Did you get a little crew of neighborhood kids in to test your recipes? How did you go about doing that?
Well, it's quite funny, in fact. I was in the process of a long-distance move as I was writing the book. So my previous community, all of a sudden, I was uprooted from, and I didn't have the same little hands to connect to make this book as solid as I was, of course, interested in. So what I did was I asked, as I had moved, in a long-distance fashion to connect to friends, children in this locale and in that. And it was pretty great because we were dealing with a very compressed time frame, and we were able to say, okay, cool. Miles and Olivia are going to take care of these recipes here, and Lily's going to take care of these recipes here. So it was very much by the seat of our pants and yet quite involved process of saying, okay, cool, everybody thought that this was amazing. They didn't know, for instance, what does for butter to foam mean? And they suggested alternative words as kid vocabulary would.
A kid wouldn't know when the butter foams. So what was their word substitution?
Something that was a little more literal, like when you see it sizzling. And that instead conveyed, oh, here's what that chemical process with the butter going on in the pan is. And it was perfectly legitimate. So I said, okay, cool. This is the mind of a kid is obviously the mind of somebody not, you know, in my position, writing this book and trying to be as explicitly clear as possible. There was like some kid-parent duos that, you know, with certain more complex tasks, the parent could help out. And because that is a reality to be faced with, right?
Yeah.
Ability levels vary and recipe levels vary. And that was really fun to see, like, oh, cracking the eggs and beating the eggs was great, but, you know, pouring them into a mini muffin tin, well, that was a little, you know, challenging. And to learn through that.
So it's been out long enough now so that I am sure that you're doing book signings, you're getting feedback. What are the kids telling you who are cooking at a kid chef?
The kids are beaming. They are just so incredibly proud. And to see that incredible sense of accomplishment makes my day. It just makes me feel like it was worth it to do it in the first place because I knew how profound it could become.
Melina, one of the things that's really impressive are the broad range of ethnicities that are represented in Kid Chef. Why was it important to you to do this big panoply of ethnicities?
Most certainly, because spices herald from different parts of the world, or herbs have been used in combinations in different kinds of cuisine, bringing those kinds of flavors to the forefront meant that a new frontier would be passed and, you know, hopefully strike a chord, you know, familiarizing people with things like sumac or fresh nutmeg that you grind yourself. Or how do you incorporate za'atar? These kinds of things are not only trendy for grown-ups, but this is something that indigenous cuisines have long made use of, and that's an important thing to highlight. And it's another way to familiarize a kid with broadening their flavor repertoire, and more flavor means more fun.
What's your favorite recipe in the book?
The not your average Caesar salad is an excellent version of a Caesar salad. I used to think Caesars were terrible, and if you've had a mediocre version, they are. But I was able to trust again and have a Caesar salad that maybe could be good, and it blew my mind. And I want to give kids that opportunity, because if we have a crappy food experience, unlike relationships, we won't go back. We won't say, sure, I'll try it. We'll say, I hate such and such. I hate anchovies, for instance. So it's really nice to provide a really delicious something and give them an opportunity to know what it can be, right?
Exactly. Thank you for writing such a beautiful and informative book. And I hope all the kids who are listening who love to cook go out and get a copy and start cooking, because it will expand their horizons like nothing else.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Melina Hammer, author of Kid Chef, the Foodie Kids Cookbook. How does edible education work in the kitchen classrooms of the edible schoolyards here in New Orleans? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blend beans are locally slow roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. How does edible education work in the kitchen classrooms of the edible schoolyards here in New Orleans? To give you an idea how edible education really works, we have to call in an old friend, the Little Red Hen. Perhaps you remember that charming childhood story about the Little Red Hen who tries to bake some bread, starting with planting some wheat, but can't get any help from her barnyard friends? To jog your memory, here's how it goes. Once upon a time, there was a little red hen who lived on a farm. She was friends with a lazy dog, a sleepy cat, and a noisy yellow duck. One day, she found some seeds on the ground and had an idea. She'd plant the seeds, so she asked her friends for help. "Not I," barked the lazy dog. "Not I," purred the sleepy cat. "Not I," quacked the yellow duck. "Then I will," said the little red hen. In the kitchen classrooms of the edible schoolyard, this story is used to help the littlest students learn the concept of teamwork. As they recite the story, they make an easy soda bread and are rewarded for their efforts with a slice of lovely hot bread they baked themselves. For a copy of the Edible Schoolyard Soda Bread recipe, or to learn more about the Edible Schoolyard program, visit our Louisiana Eats website at itsneworleans.com and wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
Out in the barnyard, the chickens do their number. Out in the barnyard, the cook is chopping lumber.
Multimedia artist, author, and creator of an unconventional children's cooking show. It's hard to describe my friend Claire Crespo in just a few words.
It is a hard thing. It's a very strange job that I have. And when you try to put it in a couple words, it doesn't really make any sense.
Claire has made a career of playfully fusing the worlds of food and art. She's the author of two cookbooks, The Secret Life of Food and Hey There, Cupcake, as well as having created and starred in the Yummy Fun cooking series. We join the Louisiana native to discuss her career in food-related art projects, which she began after getting her master's in experimental animation at the California Institute of the Arts.
I wanted to be an animator, but a lot of my animation had food either in the design or thematically. So it always was sort of, you know, what my head was thinking about, even though I wasn't actually working with food. Once I graduated, I worked as an animator. It wasn't quite as fun to have a boss as an animator as when you were wild and free at CalArts.
Yeah.
But I always had the kind of food art on the side. It wasn't my job. It was what I enjoyed doing. So I would have like a gallery show with pond pies and Jell-O aquariums on podiums. And I crocheted food.
Oh my goodness, you are
deeply obsessed. I went through a lot of different jobs during that time, but kind of landed in music video production.
How'd that happen?
I know. That is another, let's take another turn on the road. I was in a band with somebody that ended up being a rock star.
Who?
Beck.
Oh my goodness.
I know. We were a terrible band. So, sorry for us. He's very talented. We were not a great band. And thank goodness for him, he went on to be the great musician that he is without us.
But you then kind of played a hand in that.
But then we helped him work on his music videos. So I became a music video producer and did that for years, and it was super fun, still doing all the food stuff on the side. But at a certain point, I was like, I don't want to wake up someday and go, why didn't I try to make the food stuff my job? So I jumped out of the window of music video production and started yummyfun.com, which at that point was kind of animated versions of some of my recipes.
Before we talk about Yummy Fun,
yeah.
You had your first book, The Secret Life of Food.
Mm-hmm.
What is The Secret Life of Food?
Well, the idea behind that book, which was my first book, was that these crazy dishes actually lived in the world that we live in if you had a special eyeball to find them. So maybe there is a caterpillar cake walking down your street.
Maybe.
You know, on your birthday.
And then you followed that up in 2004 with Hey There, Cupcake.
Yes.
And that just blew me away when I realized your publication date, 2004, because you were so far ahead of the now enormous cupcake trend.
Thank you for noticing that. It makes me feel good.
Well, I'm really curious. Were these books originally intended for children or adults?
I don't know. I mean,
they have a broad spectrum appeal.
Thank you. I was doing this crazy thing way before I had a kid, and I would just have crazy cocktail parties with these
crazy
recipes.
Foods.
And I was known for having big, giant theme parties with like crazy themes. And there was definitely a period in my life where I was not thinking, oh, I'm doing kids' cooking. But as my stuff started getting out there, I started getting reviews in little children's publications. Hmm. And I was like, oh, you know, and I had a lot of kids that would write to me at my website and be like, I'm six. And I was like, wow, wait, I am not just talking to kooky 20, 30-year-olds. I am talking to little kids, too.
Well, that is really fun. And yeah. That's how it all turns into Yummy Fun Cooking,
right?
That
is right. That is right.
So what's the premise of Yummy Fun Cooking?
Well, this kind of brings the animation back into my life. When I started doing the website, what I really wanted to do was a really flipped out kids cooking show. Not knowing that that's actually kind of a hard thing to do. Get on television
and
everything.
Pee-wee makes it look so easy.
I know. Like, how do you do it? Anyway, then you hear those stories about all those shows that I love. You probably love them too. And they're just flukes how they ended up on television.
Yeah.
You know? So I had always wanted to do this kids show that had really great music. It had animation. It had puppets. But it was centered around some really basic, really kooky cooking lessons.
When you set out to specifically do, because obviously part of the process here is that you're teaching something.
Mm-hmm.
You want there to be important culinary takeaways mm-hmm. from Yummy Fun Cooking.
Yes, yes.
How do you focus on that?
Well, that is the flag that flies over everything that I do, I have to say. There's two sides to the flag. One is that, yes, you are gleaning a little bit of knowledge in the kitchen. So you're getting a few skills to make yourself kind of a little more self-sufficient, a little more knowledgeable about how to take care of yourself. And then the other side of the flag is that you're having an opportunity to express yourself in something that you have to do every day. So we have to have lunch every day, right?
Right.
So why not have that soup have a spider web in it? If you like spiders, you know, like what?
Yeah.
Sort of having, and I really, in all of my recipes, I always like to say, have it be yours. So this is what I like. You know, all the recipes in my book, I like monkeys and I like panda bears. But maybe you don't like those things. So sort of express yourself with what you're making. You know, it's not a make it look just like this picture. It's have it be what you like.
Explain to us what goes on in an episode of Yummy Fun Cooking.
My character, Yummy Claire, is actually a tiny little person that lives in a mouse hole in a kitchen of a 12-year-old girl. So when the 12-year-old girl has her day, and maybe she went to the zoo, and maybe she saw the monkeys, and she's reading about primates later in her backyard, she goes to sleep, and her family dog comes down to the kitchen, pokes his nose in the mouse hole where I live, and wakes me up. And I'm like, is the coast clear? And that's when I get up and I take her theme of her day. So if it was primates, then all my recipes are about monkeys. And we have this grand adventure in the night kitchen, if you will.
That's just fantastic. And this includes puppet characters. Mm-hmm. And then you even have your own house band, the Taste Buds.
The Taste Buds.
Tell us about the Taste Buds.
Oh my gosh. The Taste Buds are led by a very talented musician named John Gold, who does not usually write music for children. He writes music about his heart and about girls, and he's amazing. I approached him and was like, I want you to do, you know, the music for my kids show. And he was like, "Why?" You know, and I was like, just take your songs about girls and make them about monkeys, or make them about springtime, or, you know, just I'll give you the themes and you can do what you do. And he put this band together, of which he did most of, and they're so good. And I really wanted that experience that I feel like I remembered from like the Muppet Show, and
yeah,
where the music was really good. And so your dad liked it because Stevie Wonder was on the Muppet Show, you know, like that kind of feeling, that the music was not talking down because it was for kids. It was for everybody. So,
well, everything you do seems to be for everybody. And I think it's really exciting that you're working on this new project, mm-hmm, called Hooray Day.
Yes.
So what is the genesis of the Hooray Day experience?
Well, when I knew that I was coming here, I was like, okay, I need a project that I don't need the garage for, you know, that I,
yes,
don't need my friends in Los Angeles for, that I can do by myself or do with my new friends. You know, what should it be? And so I was thinking, you know, about what life is like here. And one thing I love that is very obvious about this place is that everybody lives and celebrates all kinds of things. Like, just everything is a celebration. And I love that. That is how I like to live as well, no matter where I am, but especially here. And I was like, I really want to do something that's about every day being important, every day being a present. So that's what I'm working on right now, is Hooray Day. Which,
Hooray Day.
You know,
and the website, I went to the website, and you're doing kind of blogging,
yep,
and there's recipes,
yep,
and
yep,
you can just visit Hooray Day,
yep,
and have a little hooray,
yeah,
huh?
It's just ideas about finding that magic in your day.
Well, Claire, this is such a treat to not only get to know you personally, but to get to introduce you to our Louisiana Eats listening audience.
So
will you please come back and bring us another,
yes,
slice of Claire Crespo-style happiness?
Anytime.
Hello, my friends. We were just stopping in
to see what's cooking with you.
Claire Crespo of The Secret Life of Food Hey There Cupcake, and Yummy Fun Cooking. Onigiri, or bite-sized balls of rice, are a popular Japanese food that can be shaped and decorated to look like animals, flowers, and a lot more. Author Sunoko Sakai's book, Ricecraft, focuses entirely on rice and how to make these creative treats, something that's great fun for children and grown-ups alike. Sunoko not only gave us a lesson in onigiri, but also shared her childhood memories of the important role rice has played in her life.
I can say that I'm not that unique when it comes to my relationship to rice, because everybody in Japan grows up with rice. It's our most important food, and our culture revolves around it. So, you know, I always pray for a rice harvest, and I grew up very close to a rice miller who would mill our rice for our meals. And I grew up smelling freshly milled rice, and I think my story starts right there.
So, you have a favorite way to eat rice? Now, you know, I have to say that I had no previous knowledge at all of onigiri. Tell us about onigiri, because it's not sushi, so it's something entirely different in a way.
Well, actually, it's not that different. Onigiri and sushi, like if you have been to enough sushi restaurants, I don't know if you've heard nigiri sushi, nigiri.
Yes.
That means to mold. Onigiri is the honorific. You just put the O in front of it, and it's called onigiri. But the similarities in the two foods is that they're both molded by hand. It's just rice molded by hand. One onigiri is, for the most part, is not seasoned with rice vinegar, sugar, and salt the way sushi is, because the sushi rice is meant for preserving the fish that you put on top of it. But onigiri, on the hand, is basically there's a filling inside. It could be fish, it could be meat, it could be vegetables, or pickled vegetables, and you mold it into the shape of a ball or an oval, like a barrel, like you would a sushi, but a slightly bigger, or a pyramid, like a triangular shape, and you wrap it with nori, or you could eat it straight. But the rice is more substantial than the topping that you get. The rice is the star.
Well, you have some very special memories of your grandmother and how she made her onigiri and how that experience was for you. Tell us the story about your grandmother.
Yes. Well, my grandmother was born in 1902. I was actually born in New York, and we moved back to Japan and back to America. Also, I lived in Mexico. But after we lived in Mexico, we moved back to the town of Kamakura, where she lived, and lived next door to her. And there's five kids in our family, but I hung out with her a lot, especially in her kitchen, watching her cook. And one of the things she really took time was to make a good pot of rice. She rinsed the rice and let it soak. And while it was soaking, we would sit around the stove. She would cook the rice in a cast iron pot, and we would just wait. And that waiting period was not just, we didn't need to be patient, because grandmother was very entertaining. She would tell us wonderful stories of the past, of her growing up in Japan in the early days. You know, just she was born in 1902, so a lot of things happened in Japan. A lot of restoration happened, and it was a time when Japan opened up its ports and became more westernized. So there was a lot of influx of things Western, and like eating a piece of steak. And that's something she talked about the first time she ate steak while we were waiting for this rice to cook. So that was kind of interesting, and I still remember that.
So then the rice is cooked. What happens then?
Well, the rice is cooked, and of course, the first thing she does is she opens the lid, right? And you have to kind of let the lid sit for 10 minutes after the rice is cooked. And you know, there's just no peeking allowed while it's cooking. So when you finally, when she finally says, okay, it's time to open the lid, this beautiful white steam comes out, and then it would fog her glasses. And, you know, we would kind of, we won't see anything for just a few seconds, and then everything will clear up, and we see these beautiful pearly grains of rice inside the pot. And that's like our first, ah, you know, it's so beautiful. And then she would take a paddle and toss it, and we would smell the beautiful aroma, this grassy aroma of the rice. And then she would start making onigiri for us. And often she liked to fill the onigiri with shaved bonito. And you just add a little soy sauce, and it makes for a really great filling called okaka for rice balls. And she would just stuff it and put a dab of salt on her palms and start molding it and then wrap it in nori and just hand it to us. And it was just so beautiful. Every bite tasted of something, you know, of my grandmother's love, of the sea of Kamakura. We lived very close to the sea, so we would smell the sea and feel the breeze and just that time, the pastime was just so, so comforting and delicious that I'll never forget that. And that's what I really wanted to share with my readers when I wrote this, the introduction to this onigiri book.
Well, there are so many different kinds of onigiri that you can make. If someone were to get started with this, walk us through what some of the more approachable ways and describe the actual method that you would go about making them.
Okay, so get some short grain or medium grain rice, right? And one cup of rice will make about 3 onigiri, 3 medium size. And when I say medium size, that's going to give you about 3 mouth bites. And once you have that fluffy rice ready to go, have a little teacup and just scoop some rice. I use about 1 cup makes 3 cups. So that 3 cups, you could like scoop 1 cup at a time or 3/4 of a cup, put it into a bowl, and in the middle, make a little like a dent and put your favorite filling. And that could be last night's chicken or grilled salmon, flaked salmon, and put it in there. And have a little finger bowl, you know, with water, and make sure your hands are clean, and dab some sea salt on your palm, just like, you know, 1/4 teaspoon. And then if your hands are slightly moist, then the grains won't stick to your hands, so then you could start molding it, and you mold it into the shape you like. Snowballs are the easiest, right, because it's just round. Any kid could do it. Like, I worked with, like, a 4-year-old. They make the most beautiful onigiris. And if you feel like the rice is going to stick all over and you're going to make a mess, just line your bowl with some saran wrap, and then pick up the saran wrap and give it a twist, and then mold it like you were molding a balloon so that the rice is inside the wrap. And then undo the wrap and then give it a final mold with your slightly moistened hands. And then wrap it in a piece of nori if you like, or you could just eat it straight. But there are also plastic molds, onigiri molds, or wooden molds that you could buy online. So that's another easy way to do it if you are not sure about getting the shape right.
Well, I'm sure that this is something that is really, really fun to do with children. Children must love this activity.
Oh, my God. And they love to decorate it, too. So what I have done is I've done a lot of workshops, like at the farmer's market, at schools where they have, like, a farm-to-table program. I let the kids go and harvest their own herbs and little vegetables, and we'll just chop them up, red radishes and you know, little pieces of parsley and nasturtium flowers, and they decorate their onigiri. And it's so pretty and fun, and even adults enjoy decorating.
Sunoko Sakai, author of Ricecraft.
There's a man who lives on the sun, who makes it hot for everyone.
rice cookery is often a mystery to many people. In fact, I believe Americans suffer from a fear of rice. How else could products like Minute Rice and Success Rice in a Bag exist? And who decided that Uncle Ben's religion wasn't good enough the first time around and that he required conversion? Rice is the original fast food. It takes only 20 minutes to cook, and you don't need a rice cooker. All it takes is a sauce pot and your finger. No measuring cup required. A 1 to 1.5 quart sauce pot is the perfect size for making rice for up to 4 people. Put your finger in the pot and pour in long grain Louisiana rice until it reaches the first joint on your index finger. Then, take the pot over to the sink and add water until it reaches the second joint of your finger. You have now doubled your proportion of rice to water without getting a measuring cup dirty. Put the rice on the stove on full blast-off heat. When the pot comes to a boil, put the lid on, turn the heat down as low as it can go, and leave that pot completely alone for 20 minutes. Do not lift the lid, but most importantly, do not stir the pot. Water plus rice plus the mechanical action of you stirring the pot creates gluey, sticky rice. That's exactly how you've ruined your rice in the past. After 20 minutes, lift the lid and using a fork, fluff up those separate grains of rice. Follow these instructions and you'll have perfect rice every time. I'm Poppy Tooker, and there's no better Louisiana eats than Louisiana rice.
1, 2, 3, 4, tell me that you love me more. Sleepless, long nights, that's what my youth was for. Oh, teenage hopes are right at your door.
When we come back from a short break, we'll have a sing-along with children's author and songwriter, Jeanette Downing. Stay tuned.
Like your mama been told you, with any good stew, when you want to make a gumbo, you start with a roux. You want to make a gumbo, you start with a roux.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Ralph Brennan's Redfish Grill. From dock to pot, offering 9 varieties of fresh Gulf fish daily. Lunch, dinner, and private events at 115 Bourbon Street in the French Quarter.
Make a gumbo, you start with a roux. You want to make a gumbo, you start with a roux. 7 blue crabs with nice big claws. 8 shucked oysters, save the pearls from Mardi Gras.
Jeanette Downing is a highly awarded children's author and songwriter. She's won 8 Parents' Choice Awards, 4 iParenting Media Awards, and 4 National Parenting Publication Awards. If you have little ones in the house, it's a good guess you may already know Jeanette. If not, please meet the celebrated Jeanette Downing. Jeanette, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Well, I have been dying to have you on the show because all of your work, or I'd say 90% of it, is extremely food-centric. So what made you decide that food was the way to reach out with your books?
Well, I'm a New Orleanian, so we all know food and music, that's what we celebrate in Louisiana. So it's just natural that food and music go together. So many of my books are about food, and they're also songs. You can sing and read them. And my parents are both musicians. My mother played saxophone and piano, and she was a wonderful singer. And my father played violin and tuba. And he was a singer as well in the church. So it just was in my life, my whole life. My mother was a child care provider, too, and she always sang to me as a child, and my parents introduced music to me as a child. And I wanted to share that love of music and books with children, so that's why I became a children's musician and author.
And it really has worked out for you, hasn't it?
It's been wonderful. I travel all over the world doing music, Louisiana music, around the world. So.
One of our ambassadors. And when you're traveling to places where maybe there's a language barrier, how do you reach the children through your songs in English?
Yeah, well, music just transcends language. So they just get involved. When I do a Zydeco song, they just jump up there and start dancing. And I don't know, it's just music is that bridge, the cultural bridge.
And in Jeanette Downing's world, Monday is a very special day. What makes Monday so special?
Well, maybe I should just sing it and let you know why. Today is Monday. Today is Monday. Monday, red beans, all you lucky children. Come and eat it up. Come and eat it up. Come and eat it up.
Yay. Monday is special just because of red beans. It is. And you have a good time with a lot of our common Louisiana lingo because we do speak a different way down here. And I want to ask you, Jeanette, how do you dress a poor boy?
Ah, maybe I'll just sing it.
Sing it.
A poor boy is a sandwich, as everybody knows. Dressed with all the fixings, and this is how it goes. First you start with bread, long French bread. Then you add the mayonnaise, blue plate mayonnaise. Come on now, we're learning how to dress a poor boy. Girl or boy, let's all enjoy a Louisiana poor boy. Girl or boy, let's all enjoy a Louisiana poor boy.
Yay, love that. Blue plate mayonnaise, only on a poor boy. Well, no, on just about everything. Yum. Now, another one of your titles, someone that I want you to introduce us to, is Chef Creole.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Chef Creole?
Well, actually, in my family, it was my grandmother. We're Creole. I'm an Isleño from Louisiana, a Canary Islander, and my grandmother was Spanish and French and Native American. We had all kind of good food in our house. So she is a Chef Creole. So I wrote Chef Creole, the book Chef Creole, to honor her. And would you like to hear a little bit of it?
I would love to know.
And this one, of course, I said there was a man instead of a woman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was hoping I was going to get to meet your grandma. Well, introduce us to Chef Creole.
Okay. There was a man from New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans. There was a man from New Orleans, and his name was Chef Creole. His hair was made of rice, rice, rice. His hair was made of rice, and his name was Chef Creole. His eyes were made of red beans, red beans, red beans. His eyes were made of red beans, and his name was Chef Creole. And his name was Chef Creole.
What a wonderful tribute to some of our yummiest things. And now that we've met your grandmother, well, in the form of a Mr. Chef Creole, would you introduce this to your aunt, too?
Ah, my aunt.
Tell me about your aunt.
My aunt came back from Louisiana. It's another one of my books. And it's about a lady who travels all over Louisiana, and she picks up something unique from every town, like Natchitoches meat pies or Ruston.
Is there a song?
Peaches. Yes. Okay. Aunt came back. My aunt came back. My aunt came back from New Orleans. She brought me back a bag of red beans. My aunt came back from Little Chauvin, and she brought me back an accordion. My aunt came back from Natchitoches, and she brought me back a meat pie dish.
Yay. Well, it seems so fitting. Now that we have made this trip around Louisiana with food, and we started off with red beans on Monday, that your latest book is about dessert.
Yes.
But it's an unusual sort of twist on the word desert, actually, yeah. Because your latest book is called Macarooned on a Desert Island. Uh-huh. That's not such a bad thing to have happen, is it?
No. No. It's a little girl explorer, and she having a daydream about being on an island full of treats. It's really great. But, of course, to be well-balanced, we have to have fruits and vegetables. She has cupcake flowers and lollipop trees. There's a whole, there's a river of ice cream. And then for the healthy side, she has little sweet peas on parade and broccoli as large as trees.
You did a good job making that a balanced diet.
That's right.
Despite the macaroons. That's one of my favorite things. Well, before we let you go, let's just have one encore. What is your favorite food song?
Oh, man. Well, I could do Kitchen Band because at my grandmother's house in Santa Maria, Louisiana, we used to just hang out in the kitchen and play music and sing. So maybe I'll end with Kitchen Band.
Thank you.
If you want to play a tune, get out a wooden spoon and bop, bop, bop. If you want to play a tune, get out a wooden spoon and bop, 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 bop. If you want to play a tune, you'll do it real soon. Bop, 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 bop. There's a crazy thing that's going around. Kitchen band is coming to town. Kitchen band is coming to town. And then twist, turn, jump, jive. Hear that music come alive. And then twist, turn, jump, jive. Come on, everybody, play. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeanette. The next time you bring out an exciting new book or song that has to do with our favorite Louisiana food, give me a ring and come back.
I'd be glad to. Thank you so much. And thanks for all that you do to promote our food.
Oh, thanks, Jeanette. Jeanette Downing, songstress and children's author.
If the Cajun people said, you know it is true, if you go gator hunting, take Feliciana too. She stuck her wooden doll in the gator's jaw, saved herself and her old grandpa. Feliciana LaRue, what you gonna do? You got an alligator chasing after you. Feliciana LaRue, what you gonna do? Uncle Feliciana LaRue, Feliciana Phaedra LaRue, Feliciana Phaedra LaRue.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when Chef Emeril Lagasse discusses his role in creating NOCA's Culinary Arts Program.
I believe that if you think big, you can be big. If you think small, you will remain small. And so we had big dreams of buying this facility and really turning it upside down into a major culinary program.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, from Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, a local New Orleans steakhouse serving prime beef in New Orleans' French Quarter, and by Toujac's Restaurant, home of America's oldest stand-up bar, now celebrating 160 years on Decatur Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.